is Transistor with your host, Velvet Steel.
Hey there. Welcome to Transistor with myself, Velvet Steel. We're going to talk about trans folk and myself, because I know you all want to listen, hopefully learn and laugh. Journey. Dolls. We all have them. We've all had them. Some of us collect them. Dolls. I like my dolls. But the kind of dolls I collect now, you probably wouldn't think about that. But yeah, I think as we're all younger and we're kids and things like that, we always have something that it makes us comfortable. And that always is a little squeeze toy, a chew toy, or a cuddly toy, like a teddy bear. Or even a Raggedy doll. Like, we've got Raggedy Ann and Andy. Well, we did in my day when I was younger, and they were in the large format, mid-sized and minis, and I loved those too. I had those. And at one point, I started to do this whole little collection of dolls and Raggedy dolls, and that kind of grew out of one toy that I had that I remember. And it's amazing how much you don't remember if you let yourself, you know, shut your mind down. And my little Raggedy guy, I did forget that he even existed until one day I saw a picture of him, and there he was in that picture, and I couldn't figure out where the hell he went to. This guy was a toy that went with me everywhere, and I was totally the little kid that would actually walk with him in my hand and, you know, take him to bed, take him on road trips, take him on trips to Europe, because my family's from Denmark, so we were there over a lot, and I had to have this guy with me. And, you know, and then he was always my companion. I cuddled him. I bathed him. I, you know, what I thought was bathing him anyway, because he was a stuffed toy. And I would change him and do all these different things, start treating him like a baby. And suddenly he disappeared. And I don't know why he disappeared. And I think my parents could see something that was going on wrong or weird or different at that time. And suddenly when he disappeared, I started acting a little bit bizarre and didn't know what to think because, well, here's this companion that was in my life for the longest time here, and then suddenly he's gone. And I know a lot of parents that do that. They'll just suddenly, okay, well, it's time for them to grow up in the next phase of their life. Well, you can't do that. You can't take something away from someone without letting them realize that it's there, it's good for them, but you need to move on. So leave it alone. It's like a blankie, you know, things like that. Everybody has a blankie, but there's things within reason. And I'm certainly not a stupid individual, and I certainly was a stupid child. And I don't think most kids out there are, but people need to, and parents in particular, I think, need to give their kids the benefit of the doubt and let them grow up with their stuffed toys and chew toys and whatever else they got on. And yes, I do say chew toys because I chewed on a lot of different things. One of them was Lego. And when I thought about that, you know, I don't why the hell I was chewing on Lego, I don't know, but anyway. So my parents figured that out, and next thing I know, I had this teddy bear that suddenly emerged in my life, and this was around the time that I was 3 years old, and you know, oddly enough, I remember my Raggedy guy before that when I saw the pictures, and it was really, you know, whoa, I do remember that guy, and I remember him completely, that's what he looked like. And my teddy bear, my panda teddy bear that came into my life, that I loved him, and guess what? I still have him to this day, and maybe you'll see a picture of him up on the site somewhere sometime, just so you know that I'm not kidding. And I recently restuffed that boy, and he's sitting on my bed now with my other stuffed toys that are on my bed. I've got my little collection of animals, my zoo, which I love to have, and they're all cuddly, cozy, fun little things. You know, so anyway, and then I from Teddy, I got my Raggedy Ann and Andy's, and I love those. I started collecting those. And they didn't disappear. I kind of gave them away. And then after that was Smurfs. Ooh, cuddly, fuzzy, fun Smurfs. And then Big Jim came along. Big Jim was the equivalent of G.I. Joe, except he was this macho dude, and he was running around doing all these different things in the neighborhood. He was a construction worker. Now that I think back on it, Big Jim had a lot of different things. G.I. Joe was just about the military, but Big Jim was a fireman. He was a construction worker. He was an Indian. Yeah, he was a cop. He was a doctor. Wow, do you think the village people have something to do with that guy? Anyway, I don't know. Anyway, he was certainly built like a brick shit house. Nah, I loved it. I thought he was quite sexy. But I got a little bit rough with Big Jim. And, you know, I had my Big Jim Ranger truck that, you know, I would... Well, no, you don't know what I'm going to tell you. I would drive that thing off the stairs. If he was going to be rescuing things, well, I was going to give him a situation that was going to be pretty hardcore. Vroom, off the stairs. And he'd be smashing into the wall and breaking that Big Jim Ranger truck. And that was kind of fun. And there, on top of it, there was this sort of, I guess it's called a nest or whatever they call those things, where it can raise and lower. They're all over the place in the city. You see them out there in the city where people raise and lower them, standing on this little platform above. Film sets have them all the time. But anyway, that was on the top of my truck. But it kind of got better when I figured out that Barbie and Big Jim could get together and play. And yeah, I was your proverbial kid making Big Jim and Barbie get it on. I mean, he was fucking her sideways, he was fucking her this way, he was fucking her that way, he was fucking her in the drawers, he was fucking her on the TV, he was fucking her on the floor, he was fucking her over the electrical sockets, he was fucking her over the, radiator. I'm getting hot here and I'm not even pronouncing fuck properly, but yeah, he fucked that bitch like there was no tomorrow. Not to say that Barbie didn't do her fair share of stuff with him either, so it's like, I kind of think that that's when I lost those, or Big Jim anyway, because Barbie was my sister's doll, and then I, well, maybe it was when I shaved Barbie's head that my mother took it away, or when it was that she saw me doing these things with Big Jim and Barbie. I don't know. They're just dolls. Translation. Hands. Everybody thinks that hands are the same on anybody and everybody. They're different on everybody's body. You know, when you're someone who is going through some sort of transitional situation, one of the telltale signs for most people out there that aren't is the hands. And you hear this. I hear this on the street. A lot of people would, you know, think about different things and look at a person and up and down, and then they zero in on the hands. Well, did you see the size of those hands? Did you see how long those fingers were? How long those fingernails were? Did you notice the hair on those knuckles? The knuckles, how wide they were? How big those thumbs were? How wide that was? That's what people do. And I find myself looking at hands like that only because I'm turned on, because I love hands. And if I see a big, strong set of hands that's got perfect veins on them and they've got calluses underneath where those fingertips are and they're attached to a nice forearm, yeah, it gets me pretty hot because I like seeing a working man's hands. Anyway, I'm getting hot here again. Where's my water? Okay, anyway. So back to the whole idea of, you know, being identified. Hands, knuckles, things like that. That's why you'll see a lot of trans people with nails. And their nails are generally done, and their nails are perfect and manicured and everything else, because the nail helps to elongate the finger. And you know what? This is not just for trans folk, but this also applies to women and even men. Men are out there getting their nails manicured, as they should. Why shouldn't a person have nice looking hands and feel good about their hands? So for trans folks and trans people like myself, I like to have long fingernails. I find it finishes off the hand. It finishes off the fingers. It makes them look longer. It actually slenderizes. It actually takes away from the look of knuckles. I don't really have, personally myself, I was blessed with some good genes here and the fact that my chromosomes are a little bit different. My hands are nice and slim and long, so I, you know, I'd rather have nice strong nails at the end to finish the look of my hands. And especially when I'm doing hair, I like to have my hands looking done and clean because it attracts attention. And the other thing that you got to think about too is keeping your fingernails clean. You know, you don't want to be going out and then having dirt residue underneath there and nail polish that doesn't look good, especially if you're presenting out in the public, because people take notice of these things, and a lot of people are out there and they don't even bother with that. And stay away from chewing up the fingernails. Not a good thing to do. And don't forget to keep them soft. Soft with some creams and lotions and potions helps for making a hand look even nicer. Think about hand models, for example. You've got some of those people walking around with gloves on, and they've got the glove on over top of a latex glove that's loaded up with moisture to keep those hands soft and supple, especially for when they're doing photo shoots, and even bleaching products to get rid of moles and liver spots and things like that. And the other thing that I wanted to point out too is when I'm doing photographs, and this was pointed out to me as well, and it wasn't just because of the fact that of what I've gone through and what I am in life and things like that, and how confident I am with myself, but Keeping the hands posed in certain manners helps to create a sort of feminized look. And one of those ways is the Spock Vulcan kind of thing, where you take your two fingers and you join them up on either side and then spread them apart with a V. And you can raise and lower the fingers on either side, and you put them on your hand or on your lap or on your breast or on your thigh or on your butt, and you bring them together rather than take all your fingers and spread them apart. It slenderizes, it lengthens the hand. And you can do that with the two, the fingers on either side, spread them apart. You can do with one, you can do keep two apart. There's lots of different options there to keep things up. So posing is very key for a lot of individuals who have larger, wider, shorter, stubby hands, where they will keep their fingers together, they will cup them, they will bend them in a manner. And as well, if they've got long fingers, what a lot of people will do is they will bend their hands so that when you see them in photos, it actually makes the fingers look shorter, so they're not so long. There's lots of things to think about, and generally a lot of this stuff boils down to proper posing and being conscious of your hands, because if you're going to do the look and you're going to go the full 9 yards, you want to be able to pass. And like I said, one of those things, if you look so perfect and so fabulous, the best looking trans person out there, sometimes it's all in the hands. Transitions. Blepharoplasty. Asking what that is? Well, it's a cosmetic procedure, and it applies to the eyes. A lot of people are going and getting their eyes done these days, and I'm going to make one clear example of what's being done that is more in the mainstream market, and that happens to be the Caucasian styling of Asian eyes, where they are having excess fat deposits removed from the upper lids and the lower lid to give it a more concave appearance just below the lash line on the lower lid. And that's what you'll see in mainstream being talked about quite a bit, as, you know, the Asian market is, you know, coming into North America much more for that Caucasian look. I personally, okay, if that's what you want to do, go for it and do it. But at times I find myself really drawn to the almond-shaped eyes that the Asian individuals have. And I know I'm, you know, comparing to all those different groups over there. But if you ask me the differences between people, I think the only people that I can really differentiate between are Japanese and Chinese, and I wouldn't know anything. And I don't say that in any negative way, but I love the shape of your eyes, people. I think they're beautiful. But I get it. If you want cosmetic surgery to change that, that's all up to you. Go for it. Do it for you. And you'll find that a lot of people are doing this as well in the trans community. What they're doing is getting rid of large fat pockets under the eyes on the lower lid. There's a lot of fat pockets that build up there, and they actually don't build up in one just solid pocket. They build up in clumps and lumps and things like that. And what'll be done is the surgeon will take these, basically the scalpel. Some are doing lasers now, but the scalpel will go underneath the lash line and they'll peel that skin forward, and they'll literally peel that fat pocket out with all those lumps and bumps and things like that too. Now, I do know surgeons as well that are actually going on the inside of the eyeball, pulling that lid out and actually cutting in there so that there is no scar underneath. But that doesn't necessarily work if you've got excess skin that's hanging on the bottom underneath that lower lash lid, and you want to pull it up and firm it up so that it keeps a nice, smoother appearance, so you're not having that wrinkled, tired eye look. And they'll go in and they'll take that out, that excess skin as well. So basically, you do have to involve some sort of cutting there, but like, if you don't have to worry about it, they'll just go in through the lid, pull it out from the eyeball, and they'll go in with a laser. They'll take all that out and they'll suck out all that excess fat and let it heal up nicely on its own. So it's pretty interesting. One of the things that I've had done, although I haven't had blepharoplasty done, I've had a few things done, which I'm going to share with you, is laser of the veins on the lower part of my lids there. I have hereditary situation where it ends up being darker. And that's from veins, which is the blue veins that are showing through my skin, because my skin on my lower eyelid is very thin. And I went in and had a VersaPulse laser done on that, and that's a lime green laser. And the reason it's lime green is because it counteracts the actual color molecules that are in the veins, which are actually blue and the purple, and it neutralizes that completely. It worked like a hot damn. And the physician that I saw dealing with that, Dr. Jason Rivers, lovely individual, had actually warned me, thinking that this wasn't going to work properly. It doesn't generally work. It did work. It worked instantaneously, and he was so blown away that he actually added it into his practice there again. I know, another trans individual setting the standard for new techniques and new, you know, stuff that's being checked out that wasn't actually offered before, you know, tested, and here we go, all done. One thing I do got to stress, though, is that laser situation for me on the lower lid, I thought my eyes were going to be fine. Well, they puffed up like balloons to the point where I couldn't see out of my eyes for a day and a half. So that kind of impeded my ability to work and do the things that I was doing. So I couldn't see, I couldn't go to work. And when I did, I had to go with glasses on because I still had very puffy eyes. Now, the upper lid as well, for those who are men tend to have, biological men who are in the situation tend to have lots of flesh on the upper eyelid. And what the doctors will go in and do is they will actually use the scalpel and take that excess flesh out, and they'll create a little bit more contouring. They'll give more of an indentation in the eye to make it look more feminine. And actually, in a lot of cases as well, what they'll do is they'll pull up on the outer corner of the eye to create an almond shape where the actual lash line is actually going up as opposed to going down. And if it's extreme, they'll go into the hairline and they'll actually pull the forehead up so that actually brings it all up. There are situations too with Botox where Botox across the forehead will actually pull the outer corners of the eyes up and the eyebrows up. If you're trying to get rid of the frown lines on your forehead, that's something that you got to think about because it will do that. And that's generally basically about 5 to 6 injections across your forehead. It lasts for about 6 months. It'll pull it up. It smooths out your forehead, but it also lifts the corners of your eyes. So once a doctor's taken out the fat, stitched you up good, and you know you're healed up perfectly on the upper eyelid there, you're good to go with nice almond-shaped eyes. But once again, check out your physician. Check out your surgeon who's going to be doing your work. Make sure they're accredited and that you've seen examples of their work. And if possible, look at reviews. Look at patient reviews. You need to know that you're making the right decision with the right doctor. Transformers. Ooh. More on sex toys. Fun. Exciting. I'm going to talk to you about the WeVibe Part 2. Part 2? Is that what you're asking me? Well, yeah, Part 2. This is coming in from a listener who kind of caught on to the last time that I was talking about the WeVibe, the toy for couples, and I had mentioned that there was more in the line by WeVibe. They have a... Well, their toys, I'm going to do a recap here as well. Their stuff is 100% medical grade silicone, designed by individuals here in Canada. Yay, we got a lot of good people here in Canada that know what they're doing. And made for a market that is growing readily and steadily. And what this listener is asking about is the remote aspect. And other toys as well. So I'm going to start off with the remote thing. They do have the WeVibe 3, which has a remote control. It is really fun. And this is one that you can, you know, insert, enjoy the ways that I've mentioned before, insert it vaginally, anally, in the anal cavity, into the vagina at the same time, externally. It is designed to sit into the vaginal cavity, and then the other bulb is designed to sit between the labia, nestled right on top of the clitoris. And when you start vibrating, feels good. And then when you're inserting a penis into the vagina, well, he has the pleasure of feeling exactly what you're feeling at the same time. Although the woman gets the more double pleasure, double whammy here for her buck. Because, you know, that's what it's all about. A good old fuck. Anyway, so we got that going on. And then you can give the remote to whoever it is and have fun with it. You can stand across the room and it does work from 30 feet. It's a strong little vibrator and love it, and you need to use it. So I'm going to give as much of a scope here as I can talk about with this guy. You need to charge it just like a cell phone. That's one thing I need to mention to people as well. Cell phones' batteries develop a memory. And just like the cell phone, so do the sex toys. They develop a memory. Let it charge for the full 6 hours as required. Use it out, drain it dry completely. And yes, I'm using drain it dry as a metaphor for a few other things. And then charge it up again, and you're good to go with a 30-hour standby time, 4-hour constant usage. It's really fun. Yeah, 4-hour constant usage. That, you know, for those who are super people out there, because I am one, have fun with it. Now, WeVibe. They don't just have the WeVibe 1, 2, and 3. They have several other massagers in their line now. They have a miniature bullet. with a long point on it. They have a wider massage aid as well. And these are all motorized. They are all powered by an AC adapter that you plug through the membrane of the silicone actually into the device, except for the WeVibe 3, the only one that charges transdermally through its membrane by sitting in the base. And once you do that, you charge it for the full time, you pull out the AC adapter, and voila, you're good to go. Because what happens is that silicone membrane reseals itself around the opening where you actually insert the AC adapter. And wash these guys with mild soap and water. And don't, I would recommend that you use maybe a little bit of a vinegar solution or a, not, I'm not going to say peroxide, but a mild solution of bleach and water as well. Basically a 4-to-1 ratio of 4 water and 1 bleach. And that's pretty clean. Don't use these guys with silicone lubricant, because silicone lubricant, once again, does not mix with silicone hardened toys. There's something in the process of hardening silicone that when you're using a silicone lubricant with it, it actually draws the molecules out and shakes them up, much like you would get in a fission reaction in a nuclear power plant where everything starts to vibrate and it causes it to liquefy and melt. So if you're good with your toys and you know how to clean them and you're all ready to have a good time and it's up to you, personal choice and preference, they're going to last you for a long time. Transparent. I hope to be. That's why I'm going to talk to you about what's going on in my life. I'm going to do a little bit of a recap. The TNT Awards. What is that, you're asking? Well, that's the Naked Truth Adult Entertainment Awards. And I've been nominated for a webcam performer. Don't know why, because I don't know what they're seeing out there. Well, I kind of do know why there is some stuff out there. But anyway, I'm not one to hide behind the curtains of anything. I'm right out there standing in front or behind see-through curtains. So the Naked Truth Adult Entertainment Awards, you can get a hold of them through their website at nakedtruth.ca. And that's nakedtruth.ca. And have a look there. If you're interested, you can go to Facebook. And you can look for the Naked Truth Adult Entertainment Awards on Facebook as well. This is going to be a pretty fun event as far as I'm concerned. I followed them for the past few years. I was supposed to go last year and I didn't make it out because I was out of the city. Actually, I was out of the country traveling. So this is what they're offering and this is what they have got going on there. So this includes a whole bunch of exotic entertainment, drink and food specials. They've got door prizes, t-shirt giveaways. They've got all kinds of swag that you could possibly think of. And there's so much more. And they're going to be having the pleasure of honoring the best of Canadian adult industry. And this is going to be at the Flamingo Hotel. And this is at 10768 King George Boulevard, Surrey, BC. And that's on Saturday, the 21st of July. And that starts at 3 o'clock. So tickets are $10 at the door. And starting at 3 o'clock till 7, you've got the meet and greet. From 7 to 11 p.m., the awards ceremony. And then 11 till 1:30 a.m., the networking mixer. So if you're into networking, come on and check it out. And let me tell you, it's not just about performers and things like that. It's going to be as much as they can possibly include to do with the adult industry of sex here in Canada. So that means stores. That means website providers. That means performers. That means social, you know, everybody that supports it, social people, all kinds of different things. And they're also going to be having photographers there, videographers there. There's going to be clothing stuff. There's going to be shoe stuff going on. So it's going to be a pretty big event that you're going to hopefully be exposed to. So come on out and check it on out. Transmissions. News items from around the world. There's some pretty crazy stuff and there's some really good stuff. I'm looking at the stuff that I've got here to talk to you about and it's a little bit bizarre, a little bit good. The first one up here is the activists plan home for aging transgenders in Indonesia. That's really cool. Yulianis Retoblat, chair of the Indonesian Transgender Forum, says funds are needed for warrior nursing home. Indonesian transgender activist Julianus is planning a home for elderly waria and transgender in Deepak, or transgender, as they call them, in Deepak, West Java, Indonesia. We have to do it bit by bit because currently no one is eager to support us financially. Julianus said in an interview with Jakarta Post, I hope that eventually people can see how important this is for our aging friends. Traditionally, elderly people in Indonesia are cared for by their families, but the families of waria often reject and lose contact with them. Once again, waria are transgender. That's the name that they use. Julianus currently cares for 3 transgendered persons and wants to their nursing home, but said it's impossible because of lack of funds. Instead, Julianus focuses on training waria to support themselves in old age. We have successfully trained around 40 age transgendered who live currently independently. Most of them are beauticians, tailors, and cooks, said Julianus. But of course, we will try to accommodate those who can barely walk anymore. Julianus, chair of the Indonesian Transgender Forum, applied to serve on the National Human Rights Commission, Komnas HAM, earlier this year, but did not make it through the rigorous selection process. I highly encourage and support this and anybody else who is supportive of this to get involved. Why should that not be out there? Trans Pride March attacked in Istanbul. Riot police defuse altercation between Trans Pride and right-wing marches. Istanbul's Trans Pride March on Sunday was caught in an altercation with a right-wing march scheduled for the same time in the same place. Hundreds of transgenders and their supporters gathered in Taksim Square in Istanbul for the 3rd annual Trans Pride March. The march was supposed to start at 5 p.m., an hour after another march by right-wing groups in that same square to protest about the attacks by the PKK, Kurdish Workers' Party, on Turkish soldiers. When the trans activists arrived in the square shouting solidarity against fascism, wow, that would start up an argument, with their rainbow flags, a group of fascists holding Turkish flags started to attack us, throwing bottles and sticks, said Turkish trans activist Kemal Ordek. Fortunately, no one was hurt as the police immediately went in between the two groups and stopped the counter-demonstrators to attack us. The same group continued to hold their counter-demonstration for a while, insulting and threatening us. The Trans Pride March of Turkey is the finale to the Trans Pride Week, started after the altercation and continued along Istiklal Street without any more problems. Transgender women in Turkey have been subjected to a series of violent attacks. Last year, 28 were murdered, showing that Turkish authorities have failed to respond to a 2010 Human Rights Watch report entitled Turkey, Stop Violence Against Transgendered People. If those of you out there are interested in listening to this, I would suggest that you go and do a Google search or a search anywhere you can just to get yourselves a little bit more abreast of the situation, because it's pretty big. I do have a lot of followers in that area of the world. And the stuff that I hear is pretty strange. And for those of you interested in some big-name people, Bülent Ersoy is one who hails from Turkey, and she is amazing. She is a singer, and I suggest you get out there and have a look. Murder suspect of gay South African caught. Anti-gay violence continues.
A man has been charged with the murder of South African activist Bapile Makuthla in the Northern Cape. Sizwe Tajini was captured while using his victim's laptop, which he stole at the time of the killing.
A suspect in the brutal murder of Bapile Makuthla is reported to have been caught. The suspect, named Sizwe Tajini, resides with his father in the village of Sioding. The same of the victim near Kuruman, Northern Cape, South Africa. Bapile Makuthla, a gay man, was brutally murdered on June 8, 2012 in Kuruman, Northern Cape, his head almost severed from his body, O.J. Simpson style. During a court hearing that was held today in Kuruman, Tajani was said to have admitted to carrying out the murder alone. Tajani stayed silent most of the time and showed no remorse. He also made contemptuous, arrogant facial expressions and body posturing at the LGBT activists who were in attendance at the court hearing. Tajini, I think I'm saying that right. Tajini was caught by the police on Sunday in his mother's home in Welcome. How ironic, Welcome, when he used the murdered victim's laptop he had stolen. In the Northern Cape, there has been a growth in increased visibility of the LGBT community, which seemed to come against deep prejudice against and based on cultural traditions of deeply rural and relatively uneducated communities. The government of South Africa appears to be responding poorly to the increasing incidence of hate crimes all over the country and is uninterested in combating the phenomena. Recently, traditional tribal leaders and a prominent MP from the ruling ANC party have called for the removal of LGBT rights from the South African constitution. Wow, such statements by tribal leaders are seen as encouraging hate crimes. These leaders have a large influence on public sentiment, said Melanie Nathans, a South African LGBT advocate now based in San Francisco. Speaking against the constitution and protection of LGBT people is a form of violence in itself, she stated. Man fined after threatening transgender neighbor. Don't think that people don't stand up for themselves. A building worker in Ipswich has been convicted of what is believed to be the first offense officially aggravated by transphobia in Suffolk, England. Thomas Sawyer of Ipswich admitted shouting abuse at his transgender neighbor and displaying threatening behavior towards her, the East Anglican Daily Times reported. Magistrates were told Julia Ford had been disturbed by noises from an upstairs flat in the early hours of one morning in February. She said she went out into the hallway of the block with a camera to record the noise levels later that morning when she came across Sawyer breaking up pieces of wood. He called Miss Ford a tranny and swore at her. The court was told Sawyer had reacted angrily because he thought he was being filmed. He later referred to Miss Ford as it and as a faggot. While in police custody, Sawyer was arrested again 5 days later after Miss Ford was similarly disturbed by a loud banging and saw a figure through her peephole telling her she was going to die. Miss Ford, 54, told the court she had suffered abuse from other neighbors in addition to Sawyer's threatening behavior. She said, I felt it was destroying my soul. I turned from the happy, bubbly person I was to this glibbering, gibbering wreck when police came and rescued me from my flat. I was just completely drained and exhausted. I lost a stone in weight. I was sleeping with the light on. I barricaded my door at night. I felt I couldn't get out. I was trapped. Sawyer must now pay £800 in fines and costs and was given a 12-month restraining order. Thank God. And I gotta say, people need to stand up for their rights, and I encourage everybody to stand up for their rights because, you know what, no one should be going to your lives as well. I had a similar situation with an individual here in Vancouver who threatened to kill me, coming to my salon and then having people phone and do all these other different things. I'm not a person to back down from things like that, and I highly encourage everybody else to stand up, get a backbone, and fight your fight. Transcriptions. Letters from you, the listener. This is a good one for you. But before I read it, I want you, the listener, to click on the audio button there and send me one. You know, if you want to send me something that I'm going to read out loud and I'm going to talk about to people, I really hope that you will, and I want some feedback as to what you have to say. So anyway, I've got something here from a listener from London, England, and it's a pretty basic little request. It's to divulge something very personal of myself. Does a person with SRS have orgasms? Well, yeah, they do. If it's done right, and you go to the right doctor who's done it properly, and your nerves have the opportunity to grow back, and they have the opportunity to reposition themselves, what the body does, it goes through a period of body mapping, rebody mapping. The brain rebody maps itself after an SRS surgery, and nerves grow back at a rate of approximately 1 inch a month. That takes a bit of time to grow that, and it can be a painful situation. You get what is called zingers, and then when they come into play and they're repositioned, then you can start exploring and start feeling what's going on in regards to pleasure sensations. I knew for myself that when I was sleeping, that I would be waking up. I was having dreams, like literally full-on sex dreams, wet sex dreams that, you know, people pretty much have when they're going through puberty. And I couldn't, you know, figure out what the hell that was when I was sleeping. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to pee myself. I was like, nope, that's what that is. Okay, that's what that feels like. So knowing that I was capable of having that during my sleep, I got on to the business of figuring out how to do that when I was awake. And lo and behold, after some serious exploration and masturbation, I was able to have an orgasm, and a pretty damn good one at that. And then as my nerves started to grow back a little bit further and a little bit more intensely in my body, I also found that I have a G-spot internal in my body. And that's been stimulated, and I'm going to get very frank, with some of the people that I've been with by, you know, their fingers up there, their cocks up there, whatever else has been up there that I've wanted to put up there. No, I'm not just randomly picking things up around the house and sticking them up myself. No, that's not what I'm doing. But yes, I'm capable of having an orgasm internally, externally, on the clitoral area, as well as feeling really good. Once the nerves have grown back and everything has positioned itself, it feels amazing. I know some people out there who have had other surgeries as well that haven't been so good for them, but I don't know what to say on that. I've been very fortunate, but I've also been very curious about what everything looks like down there, like to the point of squatting over a mirror and having a look. And I like it. I'm happy, and it's working for me.
You've been listening to Transistor with your host, Velvet Steel.